I'll mention something about that now at the beginning of the tour, because we're not going to return to the front of the factory until the tour has completed. This is a Melanger. It's from Germany. It's nearly 100 years old, and essentially it makes chocolate. And it's not running right now, but when that is operating, those wheels that you see on top that are kind of coated in a little bit of chocolate, those are solid granite wheels, each weighing between 400 and 500 pounds. And what you can't see is beneath that, there's also a granite bed that's about an inch, inch and a half thick. That also spins. So as that bed spins, those wheels spin on top of it. Any product that passes between the two is just going to be crushed up and refined. So what we do is we add the ingredients for whatever chocolate product we happen to be making, allow that to run. Those wheels spin continuously, and it just crushes everything, refines it, and makes our chocolate. We use that for two products. Number one, our white chocolate, and then secondly, what you see, it's actually not running now because there's some routine maintenance being done on the machine. But what you see being made right now is chocolate hazelnut spread, this stuff right here. This is our version of Nutella. It's not quite as sweet, but that's our take on it. And the reason we only use it for those two products is because it is nearly 100 years old, so the technology wasn't quite there. We can do the same thing in a newer machine in the back of the factory much quicker. So we just use it for those two products. So we'll look at all of our equipment, talk about each step in that process. Following that, we'll get a glimpse into the social impact that we seek to have as a business. And hopefully, Sean will be able to join us for that part, and he'll be able to explain the social impact that we seek to have. It's not about the chocolate, it's about the chocolate, which seems kind of confusing. That doesn't really seem to make sense. But what we mean by that is it's not about a consumable chocolate product, but it's about what we can accomplish in our community, and also internationally in the places that we do business with. But it is about the chocolate, because we couldn't accomplish any of those goals if we didn't make a quality product that we could sell at a premium price. So it's not about the chocolate, it's about the chocolate. That's kind of what that means. And then following that, we will taste some chocolate, which is probably why you wanted to stop in, right?
All right.
Perfect.
I like the whole ethics of your business.
Well, exactly. We'll keep that for the end of the tour, though, to ensure good behavior.
Nice.
I can tell it's a rambunctious bunch. And
he knows you well.
I rule with an iron fist. So,
Astronosy,
it's his last name. Since nobody's from the area, you're probably not familiar with his name, but he practiced law here in town for about 20 years. He was a criminal defense attorney. In about 2000 or 2001, he decided he was ready for a change, and at that point began a journey of searching for a new passion to devote his time and energies to. During that time, thought about doing several different things. He developed as kind of a midlife hobby baking, and he baked dozens and dozens of cupcakes in the kitchen of his law office just down the street. Thought about opening a gourmet cupcake shop, and that was before there were any gourmet cupcake shops here in Springfield. Eventually, he steered away from that idea, and in 2005, he was on his way to a family memorial service. And as he tells the story, had like an epiphany, this thought that he wanted to make chocolate from scratch. The interesting part of that thought was that he had no idea how to make chocolate from scratch. For all he knew, chocolate bars grew on a tree in a wrapper. For the record, they don't, which we'll talk about in a little bit. So at that point, he began another journey of discovering how to make chocolate from scratch. So he spent some time in the Amazon, found some mentors that could kind of show him the ropes, began to learn how to make chocolate. Then we acquired this space that we're standing in 2006, and in May of 2007, we sold our first chocolate bar. Now, I mentioned we acquired this space in 2006. I'll provide some more detail on the building. If you look at either side of us, you see brick walls. Originally, this building that we're standing in did not exist. It was just an empty lot between these two buildings. So those brick walls are exterior walls, two separate buildings. This building in between was built in 1894. The fact that this space was filled in led to the preservation of that great painting that hasn't been touched up in over 100 years, and it's really one of my favorite parts of this spot. When you leave today, if you look up at that brick wall, it extends beyond our ceiling, and you can see the remnants of the rest of that painting. They're just much more faded. But it was filled in 1894. It was several things throughout its life. It was a carriage factory, a cobbler. Most recently, before we acquired it, it was just a storage facility. But if you can imagine this, when we moved in, it was all dirt floors, no electricity, no plumbing. So we really had to do pretty much a complete renovation. of the space. Now, I mentioned that locating here on Commercial Street was an intentional decision. This area of town, not just Commercial Street, but this entire Midtown neighborhood, has been run down for decades. And just in the past 6 or 7 years, there's been this effort at revitalization of this neighborhood. And we wanted to be a part of that redevelopment. We didn't want to move to the outskirts of town and build a brand new facility. Something that's important to us as a business is reducing the amount of waste that we produce. One easy way to do that was to use a space that existed. This was here, it was empty, being unused, and it works great for what we need it for. And I'll point out a couple of more examples of that as we progress throughout the tour. So our annual output is approximately, this year it's going to be about 25 metric tons of chocolate, which sounds like a lot. And it is a lot of chocolate, especially for such a small factory. That garage door right back there, that's the back of our factory. These brick walls are the side. So it's a very small space to produce that much chocolate. But to kind of put it into perspective and where we get the idea that we're small batch chocolate makers, larger companies that you're familiar with, like Hershey's and Mars, they'll produce that much in a day. So it takes them one shift to do what we do in a year. But that allows us to have more control over our product, and we're able to do the things that we want to do. So that's the small batch piece. Bean to bar just means that we make chocolate from scratch. So we purchase beans from 4 countries, Ecuador, Honduras, Tanzania, and the Philippines. When those beans arrive here in the factory, every part of the process of turning those beans into chocolate takes place right here in this factory. So small batch bean to bar. Our specialty is single origin direct trade dark chocolates. That's going to be these 4 bars here, ranging in percentage from 70 up to 77%. And again, I'll break those terms up and explain them. Single origin, it's just like with coffee. All of the beans that go into each of those specific bars are from a small group of farms in that country. So this is a 70% Ecuador bar. All of the beans in this bar are from that small group of farms in Ecuador. So single origin. Direct trade, that means we purchase beans directly from the farmers. And it's just like in the coffee industry as well. We don't purchase our beans through a commodities broker. We meet our farmers. We establish that relationship before we ever decide to do business with them. That's something that's very important to us, and we'll talk about that in more detail as we progress. But with that being said, are there any questions about the history of our business, our business philosophy, anything like that? Mm-hmm. Cool. We'll head about halfway back into the factory. There's a small table. It'll be on our right-hand side, and we'll start talking about the bean-to-bar chocolate-making process there. Who knows what fair trade certification is? But we want to take it a step beyond fair trade. So we pay upfront for the beans above fair trade prices, but then we also practice net profit sharing. We're able to do that because of our relationship with the farmers. So we practice open book management and financial literacy, not only here in the factory with the employees here, but also with our farmers. So once a year when we make a trip to the farm to, number one, negotiate a new contract for beans and then also inspect our new batch of beans, we also profit share, so we open our financial statements. The farmers see what our profits were the previous year from the beans we purchased from them. And then based on those profits, we write them a check for a percentage of the profits. This accomplishes a couple of things. Number one, it's just treating the farmers fairly because they're such an important part in our business. There is a lot of exploitation in the chocolate industry, so farmers aren't treated fairly. They're not given living wages. So we just want to treat them fairly, and profit sharing is one way that we can do that. But it's also mutually beneficial, and it kind of functions cyclically. And I'll explain how. As the farmers begin to connect the dots between the quality of the product that they are selling us and the profit share that they're getting in the end, they're going to be more apt to listen to our post-harvesting techniques education. As they listen to that education and we're helping them with those techniques, the quality of their product improves. When the quality of the beans that we purchase improves, the quality of our chocolate is going to improve. When our chocolate's quality improves, we're going to sell more chocolate, we're going to make more profit, we're going to have more profit to share with the farmers. So it helps the farmers, it's giving them more money, but it's also helping us because we're making a higher quality chocolate. So it's mutually beneficial. Yes?
Can you share approximately how many farms and or farmers you're working with on a consistent basis?
Well, that's a good question, and I don't know exactly the answer to it. We purchase from 4 groups of farms, and most of them in those 4 countries, and most of them function like a co-op.
Right.
So there will be, okay, you know, a dozen or so farmers, sure, depending on that specific co-op. Okay. But for each of those 4 countries, I'm not sure how many farmers are in each of those groups. Mm-hmm. Any other questions about it? What happens on the farm? What our relationship with the farmers looks like?
I'm more familiar with coffee than that, but like I was at a session where they were talking about the difference between the mass produce and going more into a mechanical harvesting versus hand harvesting. Uh-huh. Is that the same issue, or is chocolate kind of going through the same thing?
I'm not positive. Okay. When Sean comes out and addresses Chocolate University, you might bring up that question again, since he visits these farms every year. He knows more about that than I do. From now on, I'm just going to make up answers if I don't know, because you're catching me off guard a lot. So, no more questions. So now we'll transition to what takes place here in the factory. Before we do, though, I'll point out this little visual display here. It kind of breaks up each step in the process. And feel free to come up at some time. We'll be back to this table, but pick up the product in each of these boxes, see how it feels, see how much it weighs. I think it'll provide some interesting perspective. Just don't eat it. You don't want to. There have been a lot of grubby little hands on it. So after you touch it, wash your hands. So with that being said, when we get the beans here to Springfield, when they come to the factory, it's an exciting day because we get them in huge quantities. We only get one shipment of beans from each of those four countries a year. So, as you can imagine, they have to come in huge quantities. Obviously, we don't have anywhere to store them here. This is our whole factory. So we store them in an off-site storage facility where it's a temperature-controlled environment. We have dehumidifiers to control that moisture. Then when we need them here in the factory, we bring them, and the first place we're going to bring them is this room right up here. This is our roasting room. So we'll head up here. Brick wall, that is a drum roaster. It's a converted coffee roaster from the country of Colombia. We use it to roast cocoa beans. So what we do, and we roast them for a couple of reasons. Number one, to further develop that flavor. Again, that flavor began to be developed in that fermentation process on the farm. This is our first chance here in the factory to impact the flavor. So we roast them. We also roast them to further reduce that moisture content, because moisture and chocolate don't mix. So we take buckets of beans up those stairs, dump them in that hopper at the top of the roaster. There's a little lever, we open a door, those beans fall into the roaster, and roast. We can take out samples during the middle of the roast to kind of monitor, make sure they're roasting appropriately. Once that roast is completed, if you see on the end of that roaster, it looks like a door with a short little slide coming out of it. We open that door, those roasted beans fall into what looks like a shiny metal bowl. That metal bowl is a cooling tray. What you probably can't see is inside that tray there are three arms that spin around. Air is being released from the bottom. And what cooling them enables us to do is get a more accurate roast. If we just took those beans out of the roaster, there's so much heat stored up in them that they would continue to roast. But by cooling them, we can pretty much immediately stop that roasting process. Once they've cooled, you see at the bottom of that cooling tray, there's another slide in the door. We open that door. Those roasted and now cooled beans fill those buckets once again. We bring them over here, dump those beans in this auger. This will spin them up, this white PVC pipe, no worries. And so if you follow that up all the way around to that back tall piece of yellow and blue machinery, that is our winnower, similar to a grain winnower. So it's just going to crush up those beans. Now if you got a chance to pick up any of the product in that visual display on the table, you may have noticed that the shells are quite a bit lighter in weight than the crushed up insides of the beans, the roasted cocoa nibs. Because of that weight difference, we can just use airflow to separate the shells out. So we have a cyclone on the roof, applies airflow, separates the shells, we vacuum them out, go up through the roof, we collect them in large containers. This would be another easy place for us to have waste as a business. But again, we want to continue to reduce the amount of waste we produce. So we take these shells that we have really not much use for, we trade them with a local farmer who uses them as fertilizer and mulch in his garden. And then throughout the year, he brings us deliveries of fresh produce to split amongst the factory employees. So it's really quite a nice trade that we have with that farmer. So the shells are up on the roof. What's left, the crushed up insides of those roasted cocoa beans, the roasted cocoa nibs, those fall down and fill these large gray barrels. What we have now is the foundation for all chocolate making, roasted cocoa nibs. Has anybody ever tried roasted cocoa nibs? No?
I haven't.
Okay, this is going to be our first sample for the day.
Cool.
Now, since nobody has had these, I will warn you, it's going to be a pretty strong flavor, so there's no other ingredients added. It's just that roasted cocoa bean. So it's the amount of antioxidants that a serving of broccoli has. So if you want to skip your broccoli, just eat a handful of these. It is an acquired taste. I love them, though. I can just eat them by the handful, put them in my green smoothies in the morning. Because it has a great flavor and also that nutritional value. People use them for a variety of things, though. We sell a lot of these to, if you're familiar with Dogfish Head, in Delaware, they use our nibs and powder to make Theobroma, their chocolate beer. And we also, some of you are from Chicago. Yes?
Yeah.
Are you familiar with Andy's Frozen Custard?
No, but I'm about to be.
Okay. They use...
It's here.
Well, it is here. It's based out of Springfield, but they also have some shops in Chicago. Yeah. And they use our roasted cocoa nibs in one of their ice cream desserts.
They open your mouth.
They have liquor. Once we've created that liquor, there's one of two things that we do. First, we're going to remove portions of the liquor, and it's not alcoholic. It's not to be confused with cocoa liqueur. It's just what we refer to it. It's essentially liquid cocoa nibs. We remove portions of that liquor, bring it down to this machine here, and we'll talk about that in a second. With what the liquor that's left in that universal refiner, we're going to add sugar. We'll add a little bit of extra cocoa butter, allow that to process in that machine, and when it's done, we have dark chocolate. So the chocolate is going to be made in this machine right up here. Okay, so we've created that liquor up in the universal refiner. Once that's been created, we remove portions of it. We bring it down to this machine here. This is our cocoa butter press. So we'll fill this tank with that liquor until we need to press out the cocoa butter. So essentially, we pour that liquor in the top of this machine. This is going to exert about 3,000 PSI, so a lot of pressure on that cocoa liquor. And it's literally just going to squeeze out or press out the natural fats that exist in liquor. Those natural fats are cocoa butter. So the cocoa butter is going to come out of these tubes here, funnel down here, and fill this container. So you can see there's about an inch and a half of butter down there. It's a very dark brownish yellow color right now. Once that solidifies, it's going to be a nice white ivory color. That's what gives our white chocolate that white color. We were the first small batch chocolate maker in North America to press our own cocoa butter and to make white chocolate from scratch. So that's one reason that we press cocoa butter, to make our white chocolate. Our white chocolate is 34% cocoa butter, the remaining percentage is organic sugar and goat's milk powder. The other reason we press our own cocoa butter, I mentioned up there in the universal refiner, once we've taken out portions of the liquor, we add sugar, and then we also add a little bit of extra cocoa butter because we like the consistency that that provides for the chocolate. Now, we didn't just want to purchase cocoa butter from a random company and add that back into our chocolate. Again, we want our chocolate to be single origin. There's no way if we just purchased chocolate or purchased cocoa butter from a random company that we could ensure that it was from the same country. So by pressing our own cocoa butter, we can ensure that the butter that we're putting back into that chocolate is from the same batch of beans that the cocoa liquor itself. So the chocolate is still single origin. So those are the two reasons we press our own cocoa butter. Now the byproduct of pressing that cocoa butter out of the cocoa liquor, what's left once that butter is extracted? That's cocoa cake or cocoa solid. And it looks just like this. When it comes out, it's a disc about this big around, about that thick. So that is cocoa solid. That has already been broken up a little bit. And what we're going to do with those cocoa solids is we are going to grind those into our all-natural processed cocoa powder. So essentially, the byproduct of pressing out the cocoa butter is cocoa powder. So it's not Dutch processed. There's no chemical processing there. That's why it's much lighter in color than your Dutch processed cocoa powders. But you also maintain those richer cocoa flavors. Again, in that universal refiner, we have our dark chocolate. We've made that. Another process that takes place in that machine is something referred to as conching. Conching is just exposing the chocolate to air, and that exposure to air eliminates any off flavors or off odors that exist in the chocolate. So that all happens in that machine. Once that's been created and conched, we transport it down to one of these four tanks. So these are just holding tanks, so that we can have multiple products in the pipeline. It just speeds up our efficiency. If it's in this white tank here, we can just transport it through this green pipe over to the next room we're taking the chocolate to. If it's in one of those three containers, we have to transport it by hand. But the next place it's going is this room. This is our molding room. Is that tank in that back corner. It's where we temper the chocolate. So tempering the chocolate is this process of heating and cooling it. And it does, it accomplishes a couple of things. It's what gives our chocolate the nice crisp snap, the shiny appearance. But it also helps to prevent the chocolate from blooming. Coffee blooming is a good thing. Chocolate blooming, not a good thing. So if you've seen a chocolate bar that has kind of a white, cloudy appearance, that chocolate has bloomed. And what happens is that cocoa butter has separated from the cocoa liquor. That's why you get that white appearance. By tempering it appropriately, hopefully we can prevent that chocolate from blooming. So once the tempering is completed, we transport that chocolate over to this tank here that is right next to our vibrating table. If you see that skinny table that extends down the center of the room, that is a vibrating table. So the first person in line is going to take a red hose that is connected to this tank of chocolate, hand depositor on the other end. So he has the hand depositor, takes one of these molds, those clear molds that are stacked on that table, hand deposits that liquid chocolate into the mold, sends it down the line. The next person in line will take that mold that is now full of chocolate, allow it to vibrate on that table. That vibration is going to get rid of any air or bubbles that exist in the chocolate, and then they send it down the line. Now, if you see on that back wall in front of those cardboard boxes, there's a big rack that has a lot of those clear molds. Over to the left of that, you see a lot of metal racks, smaller metal racks. We then fill those racks with those molds that are full of chocolate and put them through the opening in that tunnel right there. That is our cooling tunnel. There's a conveyor belt inside there that will slowly move those molds of chocolate through that cooling tunnel, and that liquid chocolate will become solid. So at the other end of that cooling tunnel, we have chocolate bars. We carefully remove them from the molds, put them in a cellophane wrapper, put that cellophane wrapper in a wax paper bag, tie a string on it, we have a chocolate bar ready to sell. So we'll gather in front of this table, 100% biodegradable, home compostable, including the cellophane wrapper inside this wax paper bag. The string that's tied on top, these actually come from the burlap bags that our beans are shipped in. So this is a simple way. So because the farmers are so important to us, we want to connect those that love our chocolate with what's going on the farm. This is a simple way that we try to do that. So there's a local women's shelter just down the street. We pay them to cut up those bags into these strings. We use those strings as the ties on our bars. Something else that's interesting, underneath this flap on all of our bars, there's a number. That number is what we refer to as a Choco Lot number. So it's also the enjoy by date, but it's a Choco Lot number, which you can take that number, plug it into our website, and essentially you can trace your bar back through each step in this process. So you can see when the beans for your bar were roasted, when that liquor was created, when we molded the bar, when we packaged the bar. So it just brings an element of traceability to the chocolate. Picture. It's kind of unique. You don't really see that too often. The picture on our chocolate bars, that's the lead farmer for the group of farms that we purchase beans from in that country. So this 72% Tanzania bar, this picture here, this is Mama Kiesha. She's the lead farmer for the group of farms that we purchase from in Tanzania. And I think if Sean comes down and talks about Chocolate University, he'll talk a little bit more about Mama Kiesha. But with that being said, are there any questions about the chocolate making process? I know it's a lot of information. No? You want to taste some chocolate? All right. A whole lot, because we are so small. But what we can do is we can inspire other small businesses about social entrepreneurship. Because if everybody does their part, it will just make the world a better place. Because a small business isn't going to change the world, but a lot of small businesses can. So,
street. So our next door neighbor is the Gay and Lesbian Alliance of the Ozarks. Across the street, down the block, across the block is a homeless shelter, and there's 80 kids a night there. There's another men's homeless shelter further down the street. And so, anyway, what we decided to do in the very beginning was try to engage the children of the neighborhood that feed into the elementary, middle, and high schools. And that program is called Chocolate University. And as I said, there's about 80 kids a night in this homeless shelter. Not all of them are part of our Chocolate University program, but the inspiration was to take the elementary, middle, and high school where they're feeding into and create this program. So from day one, we've been involved at Boyd Elementary School in the fourth and fifth grade classes in every single unit of study. We go there, they come here, and for instance, when they're learning about machines, they come here and we talk about these machines and how they apply to their current unit of study. The other thing is those kids get hands-on experience here at the factory that other people on tour groups like you don't get. And the kids in the program are pictured up there. The first kids are actually, the photographs are hanging on that ductwork in the molding room. Those are kids from Boyd. What we do is we charge money for tours, and we charge money for private tours, and we do tours probably every day, and we have public tours. And since the beginning, we've charged money, and we haven't kept a penny of it. We put it in our local community foundation account, and then we fund projects with it. So, for instance, at the Missouri Hotel down the street, the kids didn't have a place to... did you get those chairs?
Yeah.
Are they already there?
Yeah.
Cool. So what we did is the kids didn't have a place to study or do homework or anything like that at the shelter. And so we took some Chocolate University money and created a computer lab in their basement and transformed that room to a place where they can do homework and meet with their parents and go over stuff. And you can go out this way, Kyle, if you need to. Anyway, that's one that I just asked them about the chairs, because there's some chairs that we need to replace in that lab. So that's good. The middle school program is a program where anybody can join who wants to join the Chocolate University Club. And we connect them with a school in the Philippines where I buy cocoa beans in Malagos Elementary School. And they learn about each other's culture. They send videos back and forth. They learn what each other studies and what they eat, and just what their lives are like. The idea for this elementary middle school program is really twofold. Number one, we want to inspire these kids about social entrepreneurship, about social business, about our business model. Number two, we want to teach them about a world beyond Springfield, Missouri. And we do that by incorporating them into our business. So by the end of the year, these kids feel like they're part of what we're doing. And that's the idea, is to inspire them about business.